Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Voting is now open for the Phil Bredesen region of our Nashville sports bracket, determining the best Nashville athlete of the last 30 years. And a guy who's on that bracket as the number 8 seed, John Jenkins, former Vanderbilt guard, is on the line with us now. John, what's going on, man? Thanks for taking the time to come on with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. I always appreciate coming on here. I'm like anybody else right now, just trying to hang in there, trying to keep busy, hanging out with my family, enjoying the extra time I get with them. It's been fun.
Absolutely, and hopefully you, just like the rest of us, are making the best of this situation. John, we had Jordan Tutu, former Predator, come on yesterday and kind of state his case in this competition we're doing here at ESPN 102.5 The Game as determining the best athlete of the last 30 years. You're matched up with Steve Sullivan, former Predator, in the 8-9 matchup in our region. What's kind of the case you'd like to make to our fans out there voting for you?
That's always a good one, 8-9. I don't know, man. I think what I've done from high school to college, a lot of you guys have followed me, so I'm lucky enough to have stayed in Tennessee for the majority of my life and played at a high level. So I'm just going to let everybody vote and see what happens, but I'm not the boastful type, but I do feel good about my chances. And I saw I had to play maybe Eddie George next round, and that'd be a tough one. That was my one of my childhood idols back in the day, so that'd be a pretty cool matchup if I got to go against him.
Now, you don't want to look ahead too much, John. You got to keep, you got to keep focused on the matchup in front of you. You know. Hey, I wanted to know, John.
Like, I'm definitely not doing that 8-9.
Yeah. There you go. Hey, so where are you right now? Where are you? Who are you with? And what kinds of things are you guys doing to occupy the time?
I'm actually in Atlanta right now. I live here in off seasons. I actually started off the season in China and. I had to leave as soon as it got bad. My team did a great job of helping get me back home. And then once I got back home, I was working out and just training and kind of got restless and wanted to go play somewhere else. So my agent got me into Israel, and I played only 2 games. And then, you know, the league had to stop because of the virus. So
wow,
it's been a tough time. I'm back in Atlanta now just training, and I'm doing everything on my routine that I usually do except for going on the basketball court. So I'm staying in shape and just staying mentally and physically ready best way I can.
John, obviously you were a great player at Vanderbilt. What do you remember most fondly about your time with the Commodores?
More than any big win or, you know, any big game that I had, it was just the camaraderie with my teammates and the locker room talks and just spending time with those guys. I mean, that's something that you don't realize how vital and important it is to you until you don't have it anymore. The bond you have with your college teammates is something that it's a real family type atmosphere. And I talk to those guys still to this day, and they're my brothers.
If there was in that time at Vanderbilt, John, a best memory, a best performance, something like that, what would it be?
Definitely beating Kentucky in the SEC championship. That was incredible because we haven't won a tournament championship game in 50-plus years, and we knew that going into the game, and we beat the eventual champions, the national champions, so it was a great game. I've seen it on ESPN Classics a lot throughout the years, and I'm happy to be a part of that game. It was a lot of fun and a big win for Commodore Nation.
John Jenkins, former Vanderbilt guard, on the line with us. And, John, you may not know this, but at the same time you were going to station camp, I was a Hendersonville commando, and I remember you being the talk of the town there in Hendersonville, averaged 42 points per game in your senior year, which led the nation. What do you remember most about your experience at station camp?
Oh, man, a lot. But I think my senior year was a lot of craziness. Big games. Every game was like a playoff atmosphere type game. I just remember all the crowds being super packed. And the night that I had 60 points against Gallatin, we actually lost in double overtime. I fouled out. But I just remember a lot of the Vandy guys coming to the games, the coaches. Ended up being my last home game ever. That was probably the most special moment I ever had. even though it was a loss, it was just the fact that when I first got to station camp, it wasn't, you know, it was a brand new school and nobody really heard about us. And then my last game, and then 4 years later, the school is somewhat on the map, and we've been able to go to the state tournament since then. Coach Massey's been doing a great job, and I feel good about, you know, how I left the organization and the school, and the way it's going now. I feel like that was a big thing for me, is I wanted to put that school on the map, and hopefully I did that, especially in Tennessee.
See, I think what Robbie wanted to ask you, John, is if you remember dunking on his head. He was hoping he was hoping that that was going to be like one of your, you know, your greatest memories of high school. But I'm sure there were a couple other guys who probably got dunked on as well during that time.
It was the beginning of the end for my basketball career.
You said that was the last time you dunked ever?
I haven't dunked on anybody's head since high school, probably. But I don't remember us playing Hendersonville. I don't remember us playing Hendersonville.
No, I think
I know we played them in a Jamboree game when I was maybe a sophomore or a junior. But as far as regular season game, I don't know if we ever played you guys.
Yeah, I think we were in a rec league, just kind of a pickup game, and I think it was you and Matt Gray who went to station camp, a bunch of Hendersonville guys, and let me tell you, that was the beginning of the end for my basketball career. Thank you for that. Appreciate that.
Good times.
John, I did want to ask you about Vanderbilt basketball now. Obviously, it's been a tough couple of years. You know, Bryce Drew, Darius Garland gets hurt. That team can't win an SEC game. Bryce Drew gets fired. Now Jerry Stackhouse after a year. Have you been able to keep up with the program? Have you been able to watch Vanderbilt games? And have you had any contact with Jerry Stackhouse or anybody in the program? Do you still try to stay engaged with the program?
I definitely try to stay engaged, and I think a big part of that for me is just growing up and being a Vanderbilt fan in my earlier years. I went to Vanderbilt basketball camps as a kid, so I've been pretty invested for a long time. And I talked to Stackhouse when he first got the job. He actually lives in Atlanta in the offseason, I believe, too, or whenever he can get out here. So I talked to him, and I've seen him in multiple gyms. And just being in the NBA fraternity, you meet and get to know a lot of good people, and he's definitely one of those guys. I feel like, you know, every organization or every team has a tough couple of years. All the best teams have done it. Carolina, Duke, they have down years, and this is a down couple of years for us. But I have complete faith in Stack, and I was going to, you know, at the very least, we're going to always give our best and play hard. And then defensively, we're always going to compete. And I think in the next couple of years, we'll have us back rolling again, if not next season.
Former Vanderbilt guard John Jenkins on the line with us. And, John, you hear it all the time in sports, whether it's the NFL, like your welcome to the NFL moment where you've taken a big hit or you got beat deep on a pass. Like, what do you remember? You played a ton of games in the NBA. Was there, like, a particular moment that you remember, whether it was somebody you were guarding or something that happened to you where you're like, wow, I'm here, I've made it to the NBA?
It was definitely when I first got to guard Kobe Bryant, and then the other one was Dwayne Wade, two of the elite shooting guards that ever played a game. With Kobe, it was just in awe of me having to guard him. I've watched him my whole entire life, watched film on him, watched all his great games, and actually being a kid from Hendersonville, Tennessee, having a chance to guard Kobe Bryant, it was just very surreal for me. And then Dwayne Wade, I remember before the game, my teammates were telling me he always shot fakes. He tries to get rookies in the air to shot fake them to get to the free throw line. So I'm like, okay, I'll be ready for it. Watch film all day before the game, preparing for it. First play of the game, he shot fakes. I jump. He gets two free throws, and then I guess that's my welcome to the NBA moment. there was two outstanding players, and I've got to guard a lot of good guys. O.J. Mayo was actually my favorite high school player coming up, and I was probably – it's crazy. I was probably more nervous guarding him than I was those two guys because it was somebody I watched every single day. So I've got to guard the best and play against the best of the best, and I'm just blessed to be able to have that opportunity, especially being from where I'm from.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, people may not remember, but, you know, Derrick Rose and O.J. Mayo, same class, and a lot of people – I mean, O.J. Mayo was the guy, right? I mean, he was
– the guy for sure.
Yeah, he was the number one recruit. Of course, went to USC, and then, of course – Derrick Rose ended up probably surpassing him, but that's interesting to think back on that. So, John, right now, like you said, you're back in Atlanta. You got out of Israel. You're in limbo. You're staying in shape. How have things been left? And is it essentially like you expect to head back over there? I mean, of course, we're all wondering here, you know, NBA, are they going to try to go to Vegas or do something, continue the season? How are things left with you in that league? And what's, and obviously we don't know what's going to happen with coronavirus, but, you know, what's the outlook in terms of what could happen for you there?
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen. I think China's trying to start back. They just recently had another delay, I think, until maybe early May. So I think the NBA is looking at China to see, you know, what's the blueprint or how early can we get back to playing basketball. So with Israel, they haven't officially canceled the season yet, so I'm technically still kind of on call until they officially cancel the season. A couple of countries have canceled already. I think Russia, Italy, I think Greece just did this morning. So I'm still waiting to see if we end up canceling. And if we do, it's just kind of like free agency time, I guess, whenever that happens. It's very interesting, man. I don't know what's going to happen in the NBA. I would assume, and I'm pretty certain, they'll find a way to finish the season, even if it goes into September, from what I've been reading and what I've been seeing on the internet. I think they really want to crown a champion. I think that's really important, especially for the fans during this time, is to get connected again, even if fans can't attend the games. It's just something to watch and cheer for. So I do believe the NBA will come back. I don't think I'll be going back to Israel. I don't know. I think it's really hard to get out there right now. And I think in any day, any week, they'll probably end up canceling my season. But I'm staying ready just in case, for sure.
Former Vanderbilt and Station Camp guard John Jenkins has been our guest here on Morning Drive. John, all the best to you and the family as we move forward here, and thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys, always.
Thanks, John.
Absolutely. When we come back, we will let Marquise speak his piece on the draft that we did yesterday on the show regarding the NBA's all-time starting five. That's next. This is Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic, Marquise Munson taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, I know you saw this yesterday when we had Adam Vingan in on the show. We did a draft of NBA players that was basically a snake draft of our starting five, and Munson has received a whole lot of flack on social media, both on Facebook and on Twitter, for the selections that he made. And if you missed it, Munson took Russell Westbrook at point guard, Kobe Bryant at shooting guard, Kawhi Leonard at the small forward position, Dirk Nowitzki at power forward, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at the center position. I really don't think that's a bad team, but Munson, people are all over you.
I don't care. They don't. Half of these people don't even watch basketball. That's what I be tripping out the most.
Like, don't say you don't care.
Yeah, Joe, he cares.
They watch basketball in spurts and then want to judge. Because Russell Westbrook, like, I think Russell Westbrook was the one. I don't think that, like, people are mad at Kawhi Leonard. Like, Kawhi Leonard's like top 20 best players in the league. You know, maybe top 10, top 5 currently. So yeah.
You're not saying top 20 all the time.
No, top 20 in the league now.
Oh, he's top. Yeah.
He's top five.
Top five in the league. No,
I went down 20, 10, 5.
No. I thought at first you were saying top 20 of all time, because that's what this is. It's an all-time team, right?
But I like Kawhi. But I think eventually he will be, like, up there. He will start. I mean, you can't deny a guy who's won a championship with two teams, possibly about to win a championship with his third team. So you can't deny that. Probably one of the best defenders in the league currently outside of Giannis.
Oh, he is.
Dirk Nowitzki, probably one of the best, like, outside of Tim Duncan, one of the best post players of my era of watching basketball, maybe. Yeah, so
you consider him a post player?
Yeah, post player. He, I mean, if you watched that Miami series, yeah.
I mean,
watch that Miami series again.
Yeah, disrespectful.
He was very disrespectful. But he can also spread the floor, so you need that. And I like these guys. And then Kareem, Kobe, obviously my Laker ties. So, yeah, that's why I picked my team.
It's not a terrible team. I just thought it wasn't as – I mean, you know, the Robbie's and Adam's teams were just more stacked than yours.
Yeah, and that's fine. They picked players that, you know, they never – half of them they never seen before watch, you know, but whatever.
I've watched everybody on my team, buddy. I was the new era guy. I had Steph Curry, Dwayne Wade, LeBron, Kevin Durant, and Shaq. I've watched all of
those
guys.
Adam, you know
– that's a good team.
Adam went with, you know, players. It's fine. Like, I'm cool with it, you know. It is what it is, man. Okay. That's my team. These are the guys that I like personally. If you know, but I think Westbrook is the main, like, people look at that and it's like, why did you pick Westbrook?
Yes.
But it's like, Westbrook is very underrated. I think people look at his antics on the court and sometimes off. Well, not really off of it, because he really doesn't do anything, but he's a family guy. You know, that's all he does. That's all his pictures is. He's never gotten in trouble. It's just mostly his on-court antics, his technical fouls. someone responded and said, how are you going to have a team with Westbrook? He holds the ball 90% of the time. I'm like, yeah, you think he's going to do that with Kobe Bryant and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on the floor? No, no. Come on now, buddy. Think about that for a second before you tweet it. But it's just that's probably the main reason why people had issues with it. Because Westbrook's always been in this trajectory, especially when you compare him to Steph Curry. It's just always he's been fourth, fifth fiddle of the point guards. And that's kind of sad because this guy's broken Oscar Robinson's records, but yet people kind of ignore that. It's just like he's a stat stuffer is what people like to call him. But he's talented.
Yeah, I think people don't like his personality, I guess. Because, but to me, he's a winner. I mean, he's out there, and he very, very competitive. And, he gets in stuff with fans sometimes and things like that. So, man, I think he's a great player. I think his star has kind of faded a little bit since that season, when he averaged a trip or set the record. But still, great player. I don't have a problem with him being on a team like this. I mean, Adam's team – I think is a little bit better than Robbie's. And so what? You guys wanna draft like a full teams now. Is that right?
Yeah, Munson wants a redraft is basically what's going on here.
Well, see, part of me wants a redraft, but part of me is like, oh, you just want a redraft because people give you criticism for it. And I'm like, no, because I want to basically have you guys to have to go deep into your rosters.
Do you think this will be a problem for me, Marquise? I'm happy to go deep.
Yeah. Hey, I know it won't be a problem, Joe. I know it won't be a problem at all. I know it won't be a problem for Robbie.
I'd like to participate.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
But exactly.
We could set this up. We could set this up. Maybe tomorrow on the show we do this, and we have a 12-man draft here. We could really test this basketball knowledge here.
And this is, again, you guys did a snake draft, and it's just anybody in NBA history.
Yes, and a lot of people have, wondered, we've had a couple tweets talking about, how you didn't put, Bill Russell and – Wilt Chamberlain,
yeah.
And how only one person took LeBron. Like, it's a snake draft. So when somebody takes LeBron, that's it. Nobody else can take LeBron. You can't just have – otherwise, we'd all have Michael Jordan on our team as well. But once Adam took him, Michael Jordan is off the table. So that's why I don't have Michael Jordan.
If it was up to me, I'd have five Kobe Bryants on the court just shooting. That's all. Five Kobe Bryants.
That ball's not moving much.
Yeah, it isn't. It's going to go to Kobe Bryant 1, and then Kobe Bryant 2 will get it the next possession. But I think when people look at that, they say, oh, this is supposed to be top 15 players. No, that's not what it is. It's you're drafting a team, and you're drafting a team based off of skill sets. And, obviously – I drafted players that I like personally to watch, and that was a lot different. Trust me, if I wanted to make this competitive, I would have drafted Charles Barkley or David Robinson. Hakeem Olajuwon at the I would have drafted Alonzo Mourning. I would have drafted Isaiah Thomas at point guard or Allen Iverson. If I were to make this competitive, but I just chose players that I like personally. Ain't nothing wrong with that. A lot of scoring on my team, not a lot of defense.
What would your starting five look like? Not necessarily from a specific player standpoint, but in terms of the mix of old school basketball and now this new era that basically my team is pretty much all new era. What would your blend be like if you were choosing your starting five?
Well, see, that's the thing with this is, because one of the things that I get into heated arguments about with basketball, because it's the one sport where I think people don't understand this, is that it is so much better now. It is so much better now. My favorite sports era of any sport is probably late 80s NBA basketball, okay? I love it. I celebrate it. I'll watch any game. I think it's amazing. If you go back and watch games from them, okay, for example, I grew up as a Pistons fan. I love Rick Mahorn, okay? Rick Mahorn was a starter on a team that – won the NBA championship and the team that made multiple NBA finals. Rick Mahorn doesn't play in the NBA anymore. He's a 6'8 guy with not very much skill. There's so many more guys who are 6'7, 6'8 who can shoot it, who can handle it. Training has developed. I mean, it's so much better now, but people are still like, oh, Jordan would come in these rules and score 80 a game. No, he would not. It's just, so that part of it, we have developed. We have developed in every way. There's so many more good basketball players now. People don't want to believe that. But like in football, I don't think anybody would argue that like a late 80s football team could come in and you know beat the teams of today, bigger, stronger, faster. For some reason, people don't want to believe that's true in basketball. Anyway, the reason I just went on that rant is because my question, Robbie, is, so if you draft someone from a long, like if you draft a George Mikan, who was a dominant post player for the Minneapolis Lakers, like is he on this team? You know, is it like the eras are, you know, because he was dominant then, he's dominant on your team? Or do you, because if not, then I'm going to take mostly new guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question because I had somebody ask that yesterday to me as well. And I guess you could go really any direction you wanted to with that. But like, you know, if, for instance, if you matched up Adam's team, which is Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Tim Duncan, Larry Bird, and Hakeem Olajuwon against mine, which is LeBron, Shaq, Steph Curry, Dwayne Wade, and Kevin Durant, I mean, that's two completely different eras of basketball. So then the question is, okay, like what rules are we operating by where, you know, if it's the 80s and 90s and you could pretty much have a fist fight out there, that's going to be different. Whether it's now, that's going to change the way that that style of game is played. So I don't know what the answer to that would be. But it's certainly like an interesting part of this discussion because to your point, Joe, I think the eras, it's hard to ignore that discussion when you're having a conversation about the NBA specifically.
See, and that was my fault with my team is I tried to cross every single era of sports with Dirk and Kobe being the 90s, you know, Kawhi and Westbrook being the new era, and then obviously Kareem being the old school era. So that was my fault with my team is that I try to get players from each genre, like each generation of players, because I wanted to just draft a bunch of guys from the 90s and from now, but I couldn't do that because I don't want to disrespect Kareem Abdul-Jabbar because he's the greatest Laker of all time.
Well, and the thing is, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, if he was like in his playing days now in the NBA, yeah, he's still, no one's blocking the skyhook still.
No.
You know, I mean, Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, those guys are still, you know, I think great players today, but it's probably, you know, it just depends. I mean, if you're talking about a 7-footer, that's a little different. Now, I do think that, I mean, look, like a guy like Steph Curry, okay? I've heard people say, oh, he wouldn't last in the 80s. And I'm like, you know what he'd do? He'd bust threes in your eye all day and you wouldn't know what to do about it because that's what he does. That's a different level of skill than anyone who played that position 30 years ago. I mean, they didn't shoot like these guys shoot now. You know, it's a better game. So, but I think, like when you're ranking a top 100 list of players, you rank them based on what they did in their era. Like,
yeah.
Did they dominate their era? Then they're that great. Johnny Unitas is still on most people's top 5 quarterback list of all time. Even though you might say, well, you put him out there today, what's he do? Well, that's not what we're doing here.
Yeah, and that's why, like, I didn't even specifically mean yesterday when I was drafting to, like, do all of these modern-era players. Like, the biggest discussion I had was with the power forward position and whether or not to put Kevin Durant there or to go with, like, Charles Barkley or Karl Malone. And I just took Kevin Durant because I think he's a more versatile player. But it is interesting, like, Adam's team is pretty much all of kind of that older school 80s and 90s era, whereas mine is basically the modern-day era outside, I guess, of Shaq, which even to him, to a certain degree, is still on what most people would consider the modern day of NBA basketball.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, like a Durant is also another example of, you know, there have been, I mean, I'm trying to think of someone who would have been like a Durant in the old days, like an Eddie Johnson who played for the Phoenix Suns. You know, there's been some guys like him, but when you talk about 6'11" with that skill and athleticism, it's
George Gervin? Gervin,
yeah, but he wasn't a shooter like that. Iceman would take it to the hole, but, you know, I mean, Durant, and I don't think was as athletic either. In his era, he was unbelievable.
I would probably put George Gervin more like a Giannis. I'll probably lean more towards that side of it.
More of a slasher.
Yeah, more of a
kind
slasher.
Of a guy. Yeah, but again, like Giannis, too. I mean, like if you put Giannis and George Gervin against each other, as much as everyone loves the Iceman, like there's a big disparity, man. It's human progress.
When we come back, Hal Gill, Preds Radio analyst, will join us. We'll find out what he's been up to. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week we bring in our good friend Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, brought to you each and every week at this time by Puckett. Skillsy, what's going on, my man?
Nothing. Just living the quarantine dream, just hanging out. I'm actually doing some remote learning with my 8-year-old right now, and so this is a nice break to talk to you guys when he's yelling at me about math homework and math whatever he's doing.
I have seen how the adventures of Mr. Gill doing some learning and some teaching that's been available that you've posted online. How is this experience going?
You know what? Our first session, he gave me the, and anyone who has a kid has probably seen the shoulder slump and the head goes down and the, oh, and so I tried to mix it up and have a little fun with it. And that's where I went and changed and became a teacher, a bad teacher at that, but just tried to entertain him. And then I figured I got to post this because this is stupid. And so, it's fun to, I'm trying to have a little bit of fun with it and keep them entertained, but it gets harder and harder every day.
Well, I don't know about you, Hal. I've got a 9-year-old, and she's kind of had me look at some of her, and this is even before the quarantine, some of her math stuff, and everyone's somebody like, hey, what about this? And I don't understand most of it. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's so pathetic. I mean, let alone like actual algebra or pre-calc or something like that. Like, I actually can't hang with third, fourth grade math.
No, you know what the thing is I was a math major and I was supposed to be a math teacher coming out of college, and they went and changed math. Right? I'm like, hey, this is how you do long division. And they're like, no, that's not it. And then they do some weird thing, and I'm like, how did you get the answer? It blows my mind. I really think these kids are way smarter than we were, and I don't mean to offend older people, but the older I get, the dumber we get. I can't handle all the Zoom, and I sit there and my kid will jump on Zoom and just talk to her class and I'm lost. I don't understand it. And then math, the whole world has gone and changed on us. I feel like Brooks from Shawshank Redemption.
Hal, we were having a heated discussion earlier about our favorite sports movies of all time. There's a ton of different ways that you can go with this. If I were to ask you that question, what's the best sports movie of all time? What would your answer be?
Oh, man, there's a lot of them. I feel like every different movie there's so many good ones. There's hockey, of course, there's like Slapshot and Youngblood. Those are all getting dated now, It's like Miracle, of course, is great. I'm a big fan of Remember the Titans. I'll throw a sleeper out there is The Rookie.
Oh, yeah.
Good movie.
What is it? Dennis Quaid. That movie is awesome. I don't know. I just find... Not to sound corny or anything, but I like the lighter, the deeper side of sports, when it's telling, Bull Durham is a great movie, but there's a lot of life lessons in there, but I'm not going to share those life lessons with my kids just yet. So right now I'm trying to look for sports movies that I can let my kids be a part of and not let them watch Slapshot. It's kind of a tough balance.
Well, I'm glad you brought up those hockey movies. We had that argument earlier. I hear you on Slapshot. I mean, it's straight out of the 70s. I still say, though, that's got to be the number one hockey movie. Robbie's – and I love Miracle, And actually, I love Youngblood, too, although I don't think I've seen it since the 80s, so it's probably, like, way worse. Sometimes you go back and see an 80s movie. I know Rob Lowe had a great mullet, but – But if you're comparing Slapshot, Miracle, and you've got to say this is the best hockey movie or the better hockey movie, what's your answer?
I also can't leave Mighty Ducks out.
Good point.
That's a good one too. But I just think Slapshot is the number one hockey movie for an adult of all time. I just don't see, and, you know, I've been around long enough to, I feel like I know those guys. I shouldn't broadcast that, because most hockey players are great guys, but every guy that they talk about in Slapshot is a guy I can say, yeah, that's exactly how this guy was. And I would never name their names, but it's right on point. And it's amazing that a woman wrote that. I just think that's even more amazing. So, that's got to be my number one.
Preds radio analyst Hal Gill on the line with us, brought to you by Puckett's. And Hal, we've had a lot of conversation this week about Shea Weber and his time with the Predators. Obviously, when you were traded here, you knew who Shea Weber was. What was it like for you to play with him?
Awesome. You know what? This is kind of a weird thing that I didn't really understand. When I got to the Preds, like, I'd go back and get the puck in the neutral zone, and no one would come at me. And I was like, what is going on? And I, you know, the West Conference is different from the East, and I was coming from Montreal in the East, and I'd never played in the West. So it's different. But I was trying to figure out why no one would come at me. And I eventually learned that, you know, Suter and Weber were a D pair, and teams would game plan against playing against those guys. And so they wouldn't attack. There was no sense in attacking Shea Weber and trying to get the puck from him. He's just going to make you look stupid. So just stay back and cover the forwards. And that was the game plan. So, you know, obviously that they weren't game planning against me. They're like, whatever, we'll just let Gil do whatever he does. But they set up game plans that were different than I've ever seen, because they were playing against Suter and Weber. You know, it says a lot about how those guys played. But Shea, the first time I went out and started shooting with those guys, there's guys who shoot the puck, and then there's guys who put everything into it, and it's like a volcano erupting and exploding every time he hits the puck. The only way I could explain it is violent. He'd shoot the puck, and, you know, I always laugh because I had a pretty good shot, like a hard one-timer, you know. And Pecorine would sit there and just glove everything down. Even if I shot Walker side, he'd reach over with his glove and embarrass me and just kind of catch it and throw it to the side. But then Shea Weber would get up there and just drop bombs. And, you know, it wasn't like he was scoring on all of them, but he had a chance to score. And I'd never seen anything like that. It was just the heaviest shot I've ever seen. And violent, and for a big man, his footwork is unreal. The way he moves his feet, a lot of people don't really notice it, but he's a beast, a barrel-chested monster of a Hulk, and he could move quicker than most guys that were tiny little guys. So, total package, ultimate competitor. He was impressive, and just I honestly think you could put him on as a defensive end, and he'd sack a couple quarterbacks. You could put him out there. I've seen him play. We played softball for a while, and he was jacking balls out left and right. Just a monster, a physical specimen. So, and a great guy. You know, he was very quiet with the media, which makes me laugh because he's in Montreal as a captain. But you know, when he was in the locker room, he was a great guy. He didn't have to say much. He was more of a you know, just kind of tongue-in-cheek little jokes here and there, had a good time. But when he went out, he competed. And great teammate, great guy. You know, he was – I know you guys are doing that bracket. He should be right up there in the top four of Nashville athletes. He was awesome.
That's what I was just going to say. Anyone who listens to that couldn't not vote for Shea Weber if they're voting in that bracket. We also mentioned Pecorine. I think Pekka has a chance to win the thing. Do you have any, you know, early thoughts on how this might go, Hal?
I just saw Tex and Chris Mason did an awesome FaceTime chat with him that was just out. And, you know, it just shows, you know, like this guy – he's done a lot of things. I mean, he's an amazing athlete, but he's probably the kindest person you'll ever meet. Like, everyone who meets him is floored by how awesome he is. An ambassador for the sport, I don't think there's anyone that's given more to Nashville. And you know, I talked about this all the time. When you're in Nashville, you're asked, as a hockey player, as a Predator, you're asked to do a lot more community work than any other team. I played in Toronto, a huge market. They do a ton of community work, but because of the scope of the team and the big market, you're asked to walk down a red carpet. You know, you go down, you wave at people, you shake a couple hands, and you walk out the other side of an event, and you're gone. And they don't want you lingering around because the market is so big. They just want the red carpet events, and they raise their money, and you move on. In Nashville, you're spending so much more face time with people, you know, shaking more hands, holding babies. And if you look at what Pex has done with charity work, not just being a stud and a Vezina winner and the unbelievable athlete that he is, the community work, you know, he's got work with the Best Buddies. He's got Mikey all around the rink and always taking care of him. He brought him on a road trip the other day. I mean, he does everything. And one of the best guys you'll ever go out with, just entertaining and fun, a great teammate, always supportive. I think he's number one athlete in Nashville for sure. And I say that, and I mean no offense to all the great, you know, football players. And there's a lot going on in Nashville. I just think Pex, for me, probably one of the best teammates I've ever had, one of the best athletes I've ever seen, one of the best competitors. So, and then, you know, the charity work puts him over the top.
Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, has been our guest. Hal, thanks as always for joining us, my man. We appreciate it. Have a good rest of your day.
All right. Stay safe, guys. Wash your hands. Stay home, will you?
Yes.
Absolutely. Hal Gill, ladies and gentlemen, brought to you each and every week by Puckett's. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show. We'll update the Phil Bredesen region of the bracket, which is now open for voting. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, final segment of the day here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. And Joe, the Phil Bredesen region of our bracket, our Nashville Best Sports Bracket, determining the best athlete in Nashville over the last 30 years, is now open for voting. You can vote at our Twitter account, at 1025TheGame on Twitter, and cast your vote there. And Munson, let's get right to it. The number one seeded Eddie George going up against Blake Jeffrion, the 16th seed. Where does that percentage stand?
Well, right now, as you expected, Eddie George is leading 93% right now. So Eddie George probably going to run away with that one.
Joe, I wonder, like, the 93%, like, who is voting for Blake Jeffrion? I mean, no disrespect, Blake Jeffrion's a great guy, but who is voting for Blake Jeffrion in this competition?
Well, I think with anyone where, you know, big underdogs, and you would assume the other person would get, like, 100% of the vote. I mean, there's always people who are family, friends, and, you know, super fans of people.
Contrarians, right? Is, yeah, who they are.
And
contrarians.
They're allowed to vote for whoever they want. So
that is correct.
You would assume that everybody would have some votes from people who, you know, have a personal connection to them.
93% still a very healthy margin for Eddie George. No surprises there. Munson, let's move to the very intriguing 8-9 matchup between John Jenkins, who we had on earlier in the show to begin the 9 o'clock hour, and Steve Sullivan, the 9 seed.
Well, right now, Steve Sullivan is leading 66% right now. So we'll see how that plays out. Still pretty close, still early. These are early, you know, voting process. You know, it's later on in the day when it closes up. But right now, Steve Sullivan with the lead, 66%.
Joe, right now, Predators players faring very well in this competition.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty clear trend. And again, it shouldn't be surprising. You know, I mean, a lot of Predators fans listen and you know, come here for Predators, you know, games and discussion. So you got a heavy Predators fan, you know, influence on this. So again, This keeps pointing to my potential upset special in the end.
Let's go to the 4 seed Mike Fisher against number 13 seeded Marcus Mariota, the Nice Guy Bowl. Who is winning, Marquise?
Well, right now, Mike Fisher's winning it. 84% to Marcus Mariota, 16. So
wow.
That is wow.
Nashville doesn't love Marcus.
That's a pretty big margin.
Marcus. Nashville doesn't love Marcus anymore.
It's official now.
The divorce is final. Mariota
wow.
is gone. And now the people are speaking right now. Again, very early in the voting process, but that's a pretty healthy margin for Mike Fisher early in the competition.
Yeah.
Kind of a surprise that it's that high.
Yeah, like I wouldn't be a surprise at all to see Mike Fisher win. I really thought it would be close. And maybe it still will end up being close. But, again, it's the high, it's the Predators fan presence, and it's also maybe an indication of, you know, a city loves someone and wants to make excuses for them and prop them up, and then as soon as they leave, like, hey, bye, see ya.
Yeah.
NFL, on to the next.
Munson, let's go to the 5th-seeded Albert Haynesworth against number 12-seeded Kimmo Tiimonen.
Another early one and another close one. Albert Haynesworth 63% right now. So this may be, you know, like I said, still early, but maybe an upset later on. But we'll see. Albert Haynesworth right now with the lead.
That one's close. It's always interesting, Joe, with the 5-12 matchups.
Yep, 5-12 is a very ripe upset matchup. And I think that's how I would expect that one to end up going, right around there. So we'll see if it maintains there. But I think that to me is about what should be.
Munson, the next matchup is one I think all three of us just pegged for a potential upset alert. The 6-seeded Golden Tate against number 11-seeded Blaine Bishop.
Well, Blaine Bishop is in the lead right now, 68% to Golden Tate's 32 right now.
Quite honestly, Joe, I don't find that number to be very surprising.
Me neither.
I think Blaine Bishop is going to run away with this.
I agree. Golden got kind of hosed on that matchup as Blaine Bishop as an 11. I think Blaine Bishop, I've got him in the Sweet 16 and pushing. I think not a very good player, but also a very popular player.
Now, Munson has called for this next matchup to be potentially the biggest upset from a seeding perspective in the entire tournament. The number 3-seeded Ron Mercer, the number 8-seeded Kevin Dyson. Munson, where does that stand?
Well, currently I'm right because it's 69% of Kevin Dyson right now.
Wow.
31% for Ron Mercer.
Maybe the Music City Miracle speaks volumes, my man. There's a lot of people liking them some Kevin Dyson.
I'm just saying, man. It's probably, like I said, it's early, but I'm just saying, man, it's going to be – it might be a Sweet 16 spot for Kevin Dyson. I'm just throwing it out there.
Could
just
be.
Just throwing it out there.
Dyson Bishop will be interesting, but I still think most – I would think Titans fans who – you can't take anything away from the Music City Miracle – other good things Kevin Dyson did, but I would still think Blaine Bishop would win that matchup. I think we're going to find out.
Munson, the 7th-seeded Brad Hopkins against number 10-seed Brandon Wright.
Brad Hopkins in the lead right now, 74%.
Wow, a pretty healthy margin for Brad Hopkins as the 7th-seed there. And finally, the last game of the Phil Bredesen region in the first round, number 2-seeded Mookie Betts against number 15, Jordan Tutu.
Probably the most shocking one of them all. 67% for Mookie Betts right now.
Yeah. I mean, Tutu's garnered a pretty good amount of the vote. So, I think we all would just kind of assumed that Mookie Betts would win that no problem. Still early in the voting, and I still think he'll win. But I think Tutu's going to make it close.
Yeah, that's a little bit surprising. I think, you know, one thing we're seeing with this is the people who are on this bracket who did most of their work or, you know, grew up here, had great prep careers, you know, those people are losing to people who, you know, did especially professional things here. Right or wrong, you know, I think it's, you know, when the peak of your athletic achievement is in the city, you know, it gives you an edge. So in this competition, I think in a lot of lists and things like that, I think that's how it goes.
One thing I've learned so far through the percentages of this vote, Joe, not as many people like Marcus Mariota as we thought. He's losing the Nice Guy competition pretty heavily to Mike Fisher at this point.
Man, I got to think that'll even out a little bit, right? Am I wrong about that? Maybe.
What's he at? Munson, did you say the margin was at 84%?
Yeah. Marcus Mariota got 16.
My goodness.
So, yeah, I think people are just,
poor Marcus.
I know. If it's the nice guy competition, I mean, Mike Fisher's kind of hard to not vote for, though.
No, I mean, I think Mike Fisher winning makes sense. But Mariota getting just drubbed by Mike Fisher, that's a little surprising to me.
Joe, that's going to do it for us today. We'll continue to discuss the result of this competition tomorrow. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back at 6 a.m. tomorrow, Joe.
Sounds good. Look forward to it.
Absolutely. We'll be back. Morning Drive will resume tomorrow to round out this week. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll holler at you tomorrow.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.